Okay, good morning. Hello, and welcome to the utility scale solar and wind breakout session. I see some familiar faces and a lot of new folks, so we'll go ahead and jump right into it. What I'm going to do is make this more of a robust conversation. The panelists don't have a lot of slides, more just introductory so you can get a sense of who they are, who their companies are. So my name is Vanessa Tutos. I'm Director of Government Affairs for EDP Renewables, and I'd like to just let you know who's on the panel here. My fellow policy wonk, Mark Walter, down at the end, is the Director of Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for Trade Wind Energy. Excuse me. To his right is Mariah Lynn. She's President and CEO of Good Steward Consulting, a PR community outreach company based in Albert Lea, Minnesota. And then immediately to my left is Bobby Howard, Renewable Energy Development Manager with Invenergy, based in Chicago. So EDP Renewables, just so you can get a sense of who we are, we're a very large developer of wind and solar projects throughout North America. We have close to 6,000 megawatts that we operate. And right here in Wisconsin, in the Darlington area, we operate the 99 megawatt Quilt Block wind farm that went operational in 2017. So from here, I'd like to just pitch it now to my colleagues to introduce themselves, tell a little bit about their role and their company, and then we'll dive into the Q&A. Mark?
Check. Good morning. My name is Mark Walter. I'm the Director of Legislative and Regulatory Affairs at Tradewind Energy. Who here has heard of Tradewind? A couple of people. For those of you who don't know, we're a utility-scale wind and solar developer. We're based out of Kansas City, the Kansas side, though I live on the Missouri side. Go Tigers. We have about 150-ish employees. We've been in business since 2004. We're responsible for just over 5,000 megawatts of utility scale development since we started getting going back in the early 2000s. We have a 50 megawatt project here in Wisconsin that we've been working on for some time, which hopefully will come up in conversation. But we don't. One thing that's important to distinguish about Tradewind from other utility scale renewable companies is we don't own and operate assets. So my perspective comes solely from the process of development and all the fun things that go along with that. But once we have a project that has a nice tidy bow on it, we're going to pass it off to somebody else who has a trading desk and is more well-versed in that part of the world. So anyway, so that's Tradewind.
Good morning. I am Mariah Lynn, president and owner of Good Steward Consulting. I'm going to follow Mark's lead here. How many of you have heard of Good Steward Consulting? I'm impressed. We're actually a newer company based out of southern Minnesota, and what we specialize in is working with large utility scale development companies and helping them get their message across inside rural and agricultural communities. So those stakeholders that are participating in a large scale renewable energy project, such as a wind farm or a utility scale solar farm, we help get that message down on the ground. So we call ourselves the boots on the ground. We're the ones that go in and have face-to-face discussions with, again, participating or non-participating landowners and help navigate the correct delivery of correct information at the ground level for these communities to really understand what's happening around them and the great opportunities that are being provided. So we are located in southern Minnesota. We have 13 employees, less than Tradewind. And we've got headquarters in Albert Lea, an office in Iowa with a representative, and two offices in Wisconsin with a representative, and we serve the entire Midwest. Happy to be here with all of you.
Thanks, Mariah. Bobby?
Am I close enough here? Yeah, so I'm Bobby Howard. I'm a manager of development for Invenergy. We're the largest independent renewable energy producer in North America. We've developed over 20,000 megawatts since our founding in 2001, and we've had a relatively long presence in Wisconsin for renewables. We developed the first utility-scale wind farm, Forward Energy Center, up near Fond du Lac in 2008. More recently, we're the developer of the proposed 300-megawatt solar PV project, Badger Hollow Solar Farm in Iowa County. I'm the assistant project manager for that, and I also manage over 1,000 megawatts of more early stage utility scale developments in the state.
Great. Well, welcome, everyone. And one thing that I note is that we're here in Wisconsin at an annual renewable energy summit, and yet none of us here on the panel are from Wisconsin. I'm based in Texas. We have Missouri. We have Minnesota. We have Illinois. So what is it about Wisconsin that's attracting the interest, the development, and the investment dollars? Bobby, you want to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. So familiar graph for a lot of folks. You can see there solar costs have come down dramatically over the last 10 years, and actually the most recent 8 years, about 86% cost decrease. So, you know, you take that into account with, as Governor Evers said, a high retail cost of energy in the state. In addition, there is a market opportunity where the state of Wisconsin has a high, the same level of solar resource or similar level as states like New York, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. They're all at the top 10 or near the top 10 for solar capacity. Wisconsin's currently 38th. So you take those three things, provides a huge market opportunity and interest in developing in the state of Wisconsin. And finally, you also have deep decarbonization plans by a lot of your utilities. And the question a lot of these utilities have is how are we going to get there? And so I always thought this is kind of an interesting map, talking about mostly solar here, but you know, that shows the solar resource in the upper Midwest. Wisconsin, decent solar or wind resource, but not quite as good as some of the areas around it. Opportunities to develop wind in southwest, or southeast, excuse me, in the south, but there's a big portion of the state where we think solar makes a lot more sense.
Okay, how about you, Mark?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to just piggyback on what you said. There's nothing that I can see that is necessarily Wisconsin specific, but Wisconsin is getting to reap the benefits of the larger national dynamic that we're seeing here. With the cost of solar going down so low, utilities are excited, I think, to have a new technology to invest in that is, you know, really popular with their ratepayers. So if I'm an investor-owned utility, and Wisconsin's, you know, all vertically integrated utilities, they make their money by making investments, right? So if we can help them make an investment in something that is clearly cost-effective at this point, a lot of these, you know, a lot of the utilities here, they're operating on coal plants that are decades old and are nearing the end of their useful life. So there's some capacity retirements that are going to get taken into account here. What are you going to replace that with? Well, it's no longer cost-effective to replace that with another, you know, 1,000 megawatt base load generator. It's the smaller investments in a distributed network of energy resources that are going to end up saving ratepayers money over the long term and making sure that ratepayers are happier with the resources that the utilities are investing in. So lots of market dynamics that are getting to the ground here in Wisconsin, and I think the future, the next 5 years, 10 years, are going to be a really interesting sea change, not just for Wisconsin, but for the entire Midwest.
Great. Well, and I'd like to dig in just a little deeper, because Wisconsin, when you compare it to other states in the Midwest that have many thousands of megawatts of operational wind, and you have solar already installed well beyond the few hundred megawatts we have here between, you know, utility scale and those behind the meter, why has Wisconsin been a bit of a laggard? And what kind of opportunity does that provide now for developers who have been doing this in other states for many years? I'll toss that to anyone who'd like to take it.
Mark?
I mean,
are there Wisconsin-specific challenges, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a policy guy, so, you know, to every hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So for me, there's policy things that I can look at Wisconsin and say, there, compared to other states like Minnesota or North Dakota even, or some of the other states that have a higher capacity for renewable resources right now, the past 10 years have been really critical for our industry. I mean, that's when all of the major leaps and bounds have been made for wind and solar. And during that time, there hasn't exactly been an open for business sign on Wisconsin. I think that's changing. And yeah, I don't want to like dampen the mood of the celebration that was established this morning in the panel, but not only is that mood changing, but there's also, I mean, the economics are no longer arguable. It's clear, and I think that's going to win out no matter what. I would agree with some of the panelists this morning that we're talking that government getting out of the way at this point is really useful, especially in a state that has a vertically integrated structure for their monopolies. So now that the utilities are kind of on board and saying, we see the economic value, it started on the cooperative and municipal level, it's spreading to, you've got Xcel here in that has declared 100%, carbon free by 2050. Mm-hmm. The momentum is only increasing now. So I'm excited to see what a new executive branch can do here. And honestly, you guys are, I don't know how much you realize that Renew Wisconsin is a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. And y'all are very lucky to have Tyler here and the rest of the staff. I started my career at Renew Missouri, which is not affiliated with Renew Wisconsin. And I started it was really funny when we were listening to the chair of energy this morning talk about, things have been going great. I started my career watching Tyler organize the protests that happened here in Madison so many years ago about the net metering fights that were happening. So I had a bit of a different opinion about the, I have to speak politically here, but.
Your homework.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see at this point now that the economics are inarguable, that government getting out of the way really is what we need at this point in Wisconsin. There's lots of changes that could be made, but...
Yeah, and what about public support? I mean, do you see a difference between Wisconsin and other parts of the Midwest?
Absolutely, there are differences and there are similarities, but what I was going to kind of elaborate on based on your discussion there is, right, government represents the people. And I think for a long time, Wisconsin citizens have wanted renewable energy. And in my opinion, what's happening is we're to the point now where those things are aligning and becoming more realistic and more achievable. And I think to echo your sentiments, what you have for NGO support here in Wisconsin is incredible, meaning you've got organizations out here that are dedicated to supporting these types of initiatives at every scale level. And we're seeing that right now in Wisconsin. I'm seeing a lot of Wisconsinites that want solar, that want wind, and it's now becoming something that can actually come to fruition. So it's a very exciting time in Wisconsin. And I think this morning's opening statements just really echoed that it's now coming together. Now's the time. And Renew was brilliant to title the entire summit, scaling up. That's what's happening here. So
that's exactly what's happening. And as you focus on the community aspect, what are you seeing in terms of scaling up, looking at community support, looking at the economic development benefits? Can you speak to some of those that we're seeing as the state scales up in the renewable space, on the utility scale side particularly?
Yeah, definitely. I think that you've got, just like everything that's new in the world, right? New is sometimes scary. So you've seen a higher volume of community level and rooftop solar, but you're just now starting to see these larger developments like Badger Hollow, Bobby's project. And what happens then is you come into these communities with something that is completely unknown, and it does bring a lot of great economic opportunity for these rural areas, especially during what we see right now with commodity prices and grain markets and milk prices and cattle. What we're seeing out in those rural communities is we're seeing people who are looking for lifelines and opportunity. And there are a lot of those types of situations in Wisconsin. So when one of these large-scale utility-scale renewable energy projects comes knocking at the door of a county that doesn't necessarily have a large manufacturing base, it's primarily agricultural-based locations where these larger utility-scale projects are going. So you've got the people that understand the benefits of all of that economic development, and then you also have the other side of the coin, which is always going to be there, and that's the people who don't understand, are scared of what's unknown. And I actually thought it was really interesting how the governor talked about science. Science is back in Wisconsin, right? Well, if you're not a scientific person, some of these advancements in science can be kind of overwhelming and daunting. So to try to help the general public understand what's going to happen when it hasn't happened at that scale in Wisconsin yet puts us in quite the pickle. But it's being well received. What I would say is what the industry and what Wisconsin needs right now is continued advocacy. Those people who really believe in what the power of renewable energy, and I use that, you know, I'm being coy. If you believe in the power of renewable energy for the benefit of the state and the local municipalities and local citizens, what we need right now is more vocal advocacy from citizens of Wisconsin.
Sure. Bobby, can you talk about Badger Hollow in particular and the economic benefits that you expect to the Iowa County and the community itself to derive from the project?
Yes, certainly. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of folks here are aware of the obvious, you know, broader benefits of clean energy, you know, clean power, reduced emissions, impacts to climate change and all that good stuff. But locally, you know, I think going back to Mariah's point on, you know, getting the local community on board, these projects can have such a direct positive impact locally. They really speak for themselves in a lot of cases. You know, obviously the direct impact to landowners participating in the project for new income for them in a depressed agricultural economy. The state of Wisconsin has a really great tax system, the Shared Revenue Utility Aid program, where a lot of taxes are directly diverted back to the counties and towns that participate in these projects. So, you know, even if you're not a participating landowner directly, there's a huge benefit to services, schools, et cetera. Jobs, obviously not a ton during operations, but during construction, a few hundred for sure, depending on the size of the project. But then, you know, in addition, you know, there's also the huge benefit to these utility scale projects, which we're kind of positioning as a new value adder, I think, in addition to the solar electricity generation, which is the ground cover plan. I mean, at Badger Hollow, the developed acres for the project area, including the transmission line, would be 3,500 acres. And so that's a lot of land you have to work with. And really, you know, when these solar panels, when they're on their tracking system, you're looking straight down, it's noon during the day, that's only 35% of the surface area of, you know, what's in that project. So you've got stuff you can have an opportunity to put in between the panels, under the panels, and depending on how you approach it, and I think we've done a really good job with this at Badger Hollow, that can just have a ton of benefits to the area. And I list a few of them here. Improves soil rather than deteriorates it over time from the current agricultural use. Stormwater runoff opportunities, reduced pesticides and herbicides. Pollinator habitat has a great benefit for increased yields for traditional agriculture around the project. And finally, we're actually looking into an opportunity to do sheep grazing at Badger Hollow. And that's kind of another way to tie this into more traditional agriculture and really tie it in and give an opportunity for people that were actually farming that land before to continue farming it in a different way. And so I think this is kind of a cool picture here that shows some of the different plants that we're proposing under the under and in between the arrays at Badger Hollow, showing the root structure, corn and soybeans on the left, but then you get that deep-rooted natural vegetation over time. It really builds up the soil quality and has a lot of benefits. And, you know, finally, direct impact to these local communities, huge benefit, great fit with farming. I mean, truly, I harp on this all the time when we're developing our projects. That's great couple quotes from one of our landowners at Badger Hollow, Ken Wonderland, huge proponent of the project. He's been in a couple of news articles we've had, but you know, Ken's farmed his whole career, looking to retire soon, and this is truly a lifeline for him. You know, it's a great fit with the in a farming community due to low traffic, you know, very low noise, no emissions, no water runoff, anything like that. So, you know, all those things above, I think you could really present this as a real direct local impact to these communities.
And I'll just add on to that, just to give a shout out. Some of my colleagues from the Quilt Block Wind Farm are here. It's a project that's now been operational a bit over a year, and it's one where we developed it for 15 years. There was a lot of sort of policy stagnation that prevented the utilities from being interested in going forward with renewable energy, but certainly the cost came down. And it's turned into a great project for that community. And right now, you know, we've spent over $5 million in landowner payments. We have over $13.6 million in payments within a 50-mile area. So it's not just the landowners themselves. It's not just the local infrastructure, but it's also the community impacts where we have, you know, local hotels and restaurants and parts supply. All of these things also tend to benefit from these. And a tremendous benefit we've seen there, too, is our integration with the educational program. There's a group called KidWind, and there's a brilliant science teacher who has really taken on the mantle of being a wind champion. And he has brought not only education to science classes throughout southwestern Wisconsin, but he also has brought teams to the National Wind Challenge, where students at the middle school and high school level design turbines and they compete. And they've done very well, actually, in recent competitions. So there are a lot of sort of ancillary benefits beyond just the direct impact to the community. And I think it's important that we share those messages and share those stories. Now, Mark, is there anything you wanted to share just to add on to that about your projects here in the state?
I was just listening closely to Bobby because we're in the same county and they're a little further ahead of us in development, so I'm taking notes about all the things that they're doing. Honestly, though, I'm curious, how many people here have been to a public hearing for a wind facility or a solar facility? There's a few folks. If you ever get the opportunity, first, because you're probably all in favor of wind and solar, please go and speak. But it's really useful to go and understand what we're dealing with here. Some of the opposition that we have dealt with on the local level, there is a lot of misinformation, and we talk here about all the benefits that there are to the community, and I don't think that we're overstating anything. I think there are legitimate economic benefits, there's legitimate job benefits coming to these communities, and where else are some of these places going to be able to attract $300-500 million worth of investment to their local towns? That's not insubstantial, right? But the challenge is, if you go to these local hearings, the level of vociferous, you know, it feels like hatred at a lot of times. That's where we need people like Mariah to help us figure out how can we. I mean, you've got companies that are, you know, Spanish or Italian or Portuguese that are based in Kansas City or Austin or Chicago, and it feels like some outsider sometimes coming in and doing something that, you know, isn't necessarily trusted. So I'm very curious, and I would love to hear from you guys in the questions period too, and from Mariah about what we can do as an industry to not just have the actual benefits that are real. And once people have the facility in their territory, they see them, they understand a little bit better. But how can we build trust as an industry, especially in Wisconsin, because it's such a nascent market here. Like, there's so much room for growth, and it will probably happen, but it doesn't necessarily, even though the prices are coming down, there's no guarantee that it will happen, right? People can stand in the way, and these projects can die on the vine. So maybe we're pivoting too much, but I'm curious, what do you think we should do? What
yeah,
should we
yeah, that's
do
a
better?
Fair question.
That's a very, very good question. And again, being where Wisconsin is with the large utility scale developments, you know, we have seen projects die in Wisconsin. You know, so you use the term die on the vine. And you actually are correct in stating that people can stop this. So what can we do as an industry? I think the number one thing that can be done is communication. So all of the wonderful things that are happening inside Quilt Block, making sure that that is out and it's touted. A lot of times across industries, people don't like to talk about the good things that they do, especially in the Midwest, because that's kind of taboo here. I'm Minnesotan. I'll never tell you if I'm good or not, because that's just not what you do. But inside this industry, it's absolutely necessary for everyone to talk about all of these benefits, and not just once, not just twice, not three times, seven or more times for every single point. get the media, get the outreach, spread the word, and cultivate those supporters. I think there's a lot that can be done in Wisconsin, too, for networking. With these large-scale projects, the participating landowners, you know, they're at the cusp of this, too. They're getting questions from neighbors. They're getting questions from local governmental units, and making sure that they're informed and they have all of the information to advocate for not only the projects that they're participating in, but the industry as a whole, and really understanding that. That's actually been one of my favorite things about this industry, and I just had this conversation over breakfast. One of the things I admire most about renewables is the amount of camaraderie among different developers and different companies. It's almost family-like in atmosphere. I've never seen one developer say anything bad about another developer, even though they're competition, because it's not about you. It just seems like that's at the core of renewables, is it's not about any one person or thing. It's this greater passion for what's best for everyone. And it makes sense that that would be a renewable energy company or industry that takes that tone. We just need more people to understand that, see those positives, feel those positives, and get involved in the positive aspects of all of this.
Yeah. And so, Bobby, as a developer, how have you navigated that boots on the ground here in Iowa County?
Yes, yeah, so I was going to add, you know, for us, what's worked really, really well is establishing a local presence early on. I can't tell you, it's certainly happened more than once when my first public meeting I've been referred to as that outfit from Chicago. So, you know, you go, don't wait until construction is about to start. When you come in and you have a development, open an office, hire a person or two locally who has the relationships and has the trust of the community, and people can come with questions, and if they can't answer it, they can pass it along to the developer or whomever. But at Badger Hollow, we hired a great local representative, Tracy Philback. She's actually here today.
She's here.
She might be in the audience. But she has just been a godsend for that project, and we hired her last year. And you know, the office has been available 2 days a week. People can come in, look at maps. And I think that has done a lot to you know, possibly suppress any bubbling opposition that could become a problem.
It also, just to piggyback on that, don't you feel like as you're going through this with Badger Hollow and the permitting and the hearing that you had yesterday, don't you feel as though maybe those that are watching as regulators are appreciating the actions that you've taken from that communication standpoint? Meaning, not only is it good for the community, it's also good for the development and good for the success outcome, right?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, track all your outreach efforts. You know, sometimes no good deed goes unpunished. People are not going to always be receptive to you. But for sure, as we've been going through the permitting process at Badger Hollow, we actually had our technical hearing with the PSC yesterday. You know, clearly they were interested in our outreach efforts, down to dates, times, people. So it's certainly paid off.
Great. Now, I'd like to pivot a little bit to talk about technology, because we have looked already at the fact that technology has helped these costs come down. But I spent the day yesterday up at the Capitol meeting with assembly members, meeting with members of the Senate, and I got a couple of questions, you know, sort of head scratching. Why is solar happening here? Why are you not looking at Arizona and New Mexico and the dry desert and the places where you expect solar to be? Largely, it is technological advancements, but I'd love for y'all to talk about, you know, exactly what it is, not just happening now, but what you see on the horizon for the future of solar development in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it kind of goes back to my opening remarks. It's a lot of cost driven, truly. I think the economics speak for themselves, really. And, you know, 10 years ago, maybe you'd have to go into a community and you'd kind of talk about the fluffy stuff and kind of the nice, you know, global impacts of these projects. You know, I don't use the term global warming in local meetings. It just doesn't come up, and truly no one really is focused on that. They're focused on what are the direct impacts to my community, and, you know, I think that's kind of why this has increased adoption over time. You know, regarding new, like, technological and advances and innovations that I see over the next 5 years, storage is obviously going to be a big one. We're seeing more and more of that coming online throughout the country, and, you know, in Wisconsin, that's certainly a possibility and something we're looking forward to. And again, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but the ground cover thing, I'm just personally super excited about it, and I think it's going to make a lot of advances and truly be a way to advance these projects.
What are you seeing, Mark? Wind or solar?
Yeah, I think a lot of the, maybe I'm wrong, but I think a lot of the actual technological developments that you read about in the news that are really exciting, you know, that every week I feel like I read a new article about they've reached a new level of panel efficiency or taller wind turbines that access more of the wind stream. And I think that's great, and that continues to drive costs down, but I think the manufacturing aspect of it, how quickly can we globally scale up manufacturing? That's one of the biggest challenges, because once you reach the level of production that we are here in the United States, the question is not like what's the new shiny technological object, but how quickly can we scale it up so it's cost effective so that it can actually make a difference in the industry? We had a bit of a hit a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago with the tariffs that were put on the solar industry. That was, you know, ostensibly designed to help push manufacturing in the United States, but on a 4-year time frame, it's hard to justify a new manufacturing facility for utility scale solar. If you know that you've only got 4 years to corner the market, and most of those years are probably going to be actually done developing the facility. So anyways, I think manufacturing is something that we need to figure out how we can incentivize more. With wind right now, because it's older and it's more established than solar, every time I go into a state that has a heavy wind presence, I can also point to 4 or 5 manufacturing facilities that are in that state that employ hundreds of people. And that makes a big difference. So I am excited about storage. I'm really excited to see what happens. For those of you who don't know, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, came out with an order a year ago, 841 mm-hmm. is what it was called, that required that the regional transmission organizations allow storage to participate in every way that storage can participate. So those rules are forthcoming. By the end of 2019, I think most of the RTOs will have those rules in place. And once there's a market for that product, we're going to see it scale up. The prices are already coming down, and that's really going to change the nature of the discussion around, what's currently, a variable resource. That's going to go away in the next few years. We're going to not have to talk about that any longer. It's going to be fun.
I think that's right. And there's a storage panel this afternoon, one of the breakout sessions. So I encourage folks to attend that, and I'll be there myself learning something. So my last question before I open it up to Q&A, and please don't be shy, we have a microphone up here, or we might have someone pass around a microphone as well. So be thinking of a couple of questions you might have for this panel. But I'd like to end with Mariah, again, on the topic of technology. What do you see in terms of these more traditional rural communities accepting this sort of advanced 21st century technology?
It's a really good point. I will be completely blunt in the fact that those that reap the benefits from land lease payments, whether it's solar or wind, are very, very quick to accept and be excited for these projects. But again, that newer technology standpoint is very scary. So even those that are accepting payments, and I don't know, maybe the developers can talk more about that, kind of what the closing is like on some of these lease agreements, because of the fact that the technology that's going to be deployed for these projects potentially hasn't even come out yet. So like Bobby said, when you're there and you're trying to communicate early, the number one question is about the technology. What kind of solar panels are you using? Or, we can tell them the megawatt of the wind turbine, but we might not be able to give them the exact specs of that wind turbine yet, because these developments take time, right? So from a technology standpoint, I think it's very confusing and can muddle the waters quite a bit in rural communities, just as they would in metro communities. They're going to have the same questions. I can tell from kind of the other side of technology, we're seeing a lot of activity on Facebook and social media right now, from both advocates and from oppositional groups. So the opposition groups for wind, large utility scale wind, and large utility scale solar. There are lots of groups, especially here in Wisconsin, who are very well organized and very present on social media. That's definitely something I would encourage those of you that are in attendance that would like to help with advocating for the scale up of renewables in Wisconsin. Go out, use social media and show your advocacy, share the wonderful things that these companies and developers are and operators are doing out there. But moreover, pay really close attention to what's being said. If you really truly believe in this, and I know you do, as do we, pay attention to what's being said and take every opportunity to correct misinformation that you come across, not only in real life in your conversations, but also socially online, because there is a large amount of misinformation out there and it's growing very, very rapidly. So I'd say that's one thing technology brings to the table that maybe we could use a little bit more to our advantage, is getting out there and making sure that that correct information is there. Renew does a great job of that as an example, right? But we can all do a better job.
Yeah, that's good advice. The more of us who can be foot soldiers in the promotion of renewable energy, the better. So yeah, let me open it up to questions. Yes, sir.
No comment. No. No. You know, typically from what I've seen in the project areas that we've been working in is, you know, you have local opposition. So I highly doubt that there's a non-renewable energy company that just sporadically has people planted in all of these rural communities. However, there is a great amount of organization. And to be honest and blunt with you, there's also playbooks out there. So when one of these projects comes into a community, all it takes is one person to start putting up a stink, so to say, and all of a sudden they get a playbook from those who have opposed projects before them and just adamantly oppose any sort of advancement of this type of technology in rural communities. So all of a sudden you've got somebody that's putting up a stink, and then they now have a playbook of what they can do to throw hurdles up to try to stop developments like this. So is there a network? Absolutely. Who's funding it? Nobody knows. That's my safe answer.
Well, and I think just to build on that, I don't think there is necessarily a coordinated fossil fuel industry opposition to renewables. In fact, what we're seeing more and more in the press is you have the oil majors, for instance, coming out publicly, supporting a carbon price, recognizing climate change, saying it's anthropogenic and we need to do something about it. It's good for their bottom line. Partly, I think they're trying to forestall any potential litigation in the future. So I think it's less driven by some of the behemoths that might readily come to mind, but there are individuals affiliated with those industries who personally have it out for wind or have it out for solar. And so we see them and some of their resources that are funding these quote unquote think tanks and organizations. So there's a bit of it, but it's not sort of a coordinated industry antipathy.
And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I worry sometimes that by othering, you know, the opposition, that we don't do ourselves any favors as an industry in taking seriously some of the real concerns that people have about the changing of their rural landscape and about the change of their hometown, that, you know, they grew up like this and it's been this way for 50 years, so why should it have to change now? So I you know, there very well may be playbooks out there and people who are actively funding opposition groups to stop these projects for a number of reasons, but all of that, I totally agree with you. All of that wouldn't happen if people didn't have problems in the first place that we need to learn how to address as an industry.
It's raising our bar.
Yeah, exactly.
It's holding us to a higher standard, which is good.
Good.
Yeah, that's a good point. Next question.
Thank you. I'll follow up on that point. My name is Rob Daniels, and I'm with the town of Stark, which is in Vernon County, and I'm a member of an intermunicipal energy planning committee. There are 9 towns, and 3 of those towns are impacted by the renewable energy projects and the Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line proposal. I work closely with the elected officials. I'm one myself, or served for one. And the question that actually keeps coming up on the note of accountability is that actually people are very proactive in terms of environmental goals. The USDA RUS draft environmental impact statement for the Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line proposal just identified 15 power plants that are actually economically benefited by the proposed Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line. And if their constituents, they read this as doing the math of it essentially for the first time in Wisconsin, the interest in investing in about $3.2 billion towards reduction of CO2, because we already have enough generation in Wisconsin. We don't, as was pointed out in this morning's session, we don't have a need for the generation. So the driver here is CO2 emissions. I think the important issue in communicating effectively with those communities and those municipalities is to raise the bar, as has been said, and to enter into a larger discussion, which is directly the CO2 accountability. And I think the way to do that would be, and this is the question I have for the panelists, is each of the developers and public relations firms, people interested, in encouraging for accountability for Wisconsin ratepayers, a cost-benefit analysis that's founded on the CO2 reduction benefits. And for example, to compare the benefits that would come to Wisconsin ratepayers and environmentalists who are motivated, not by renewable energy per se, but by seeing CO2 as the final outcome, to do a cost-benefit analysis that would demonstrate that it would not be more, that it is more cost-effective, for example, to spend the $3.2 billion on building new power plants compared to spending the $3.2 billion on developing a modern energy efficiency load management and distributed generation program. I would point out that the heralded accomplishment of getting $5.5 million to develop rooftop, community, home, solar, that kind of thing that was discussed this morning from the Focus on Energy program represents 1/10,000th of a percent of the money in capital utility investments that have caused our rates to go to the highest in the Midwest, as was demonstrated. So if you want to have a communication with your neighbors, of which I am one, and talk about the benefits of building new power plants in Wisconsin, will you support the role of cost-benefit analysis and with CO2 being the outcome, reduction in CO2? Comparing those billions going into end-user dollars rather than into utility investments.
I'd say Vanessa, would you like to?
And that's all the time we have.
Wow. I think there are some countries actually already doing that. In Europe, you see strong commitments to the Paris Climate Accords. I think there is a role for there to be a carbon-related cost-benefit analysis, and I think there's no one solution. It's not going to be just these power plants. It's going to be a combination of new utility scale power, along with energy efficiency, along with distributed generation. It's all going to be necessary, and that's how we get to that carbon future. But including that in analysis and maybe incorporating that into the way the Public Utilities Public Service Commission analyzes projects might not be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Last question.
Yeah, this is not so much of a question, but I want to get your input on this. The utilities, well, earlier today it was talked about, there's a mantra going on, I hear in this meeting, that government has to get out of the way, right? We heard that today. Government got out of the way for 80 years and they let the utilities stack the Public Service Commission, the federal and state regulatory agencies, and destroy the municipal power networks. And we need to be able to mandate to Xcel Energy, if they want to be 100% renewable by the year 2050, do it by 2030 to avoid catastrophic climate change. Otherwise, we'll revoke your license to operate in the state of Wisconsin. So I would like to see government get back in charge of telling these big utilities what they're going to do and when they're going to do it by.
Definitely support in the room. I'd certainly welcome response.
I came from the rooftop industry originally, and rooftop solar, I'm sure all of you understand, is seen as a direct threat to the utilities business model, right? So they get very concerned when they see people who are taking what they see as taking kilowatt hours away from their system, and they make economic arguments about that. I work in the utility sector now, and we don't have any closer friends in the utility industry. And that's new. So within the past 5 years, I would say, we have relationships that have developed in the utility sector because they all have seen the economic benefits of it, and they all want to figure out how they can invest in more generation, quite frankly. And there's more nuanced arguments than that, right? But it's a challenge to, again, I think you're right in a lot of ways, but it's an oversimplification to say that I think the utilities don't have all of our interests at heart now on clean energy. Xcel's a perfect example of that. I don't think they would have come out and said, we're going to go carbon free. Their shareholders would not have allowed them to come out and say, we're going to be a carbon free utility by 2050 if it didn't make sense for them in a business way. So now the incentives are a little more aligned in terms of utilities and climate change. I'm a human and I really want to live on this planet in the future. And so I agree with you that we need to move faster. And the only ways that we can move faster are through either all of the prices just totally win all the time, which we're currently well on track to get there, or we price in carbon or other environmental risks, so you tax somehow, or you subsidize, right? So you either regulate it out or you tax it out. And so there's real policy levers that we have to push, but I don't live in Wisconsin, and the only way that we're going to get people to change their tune is to actively call your legislators and say, here's what we think needs to happen. Here's what our local communities would like to see in terms of legislation. So there is a role for government here, and I totally agree with you, but it has to start from real people in Wisconsin with real issues and wanting to see them get met by their responsive government. So yeah,
that's exactly right. And I think to your point, government writ large has been remiss in protecting things like health and the environment for many years. And now the corporate sector is stepping in a big way, from everything from sustainability to environmental focus to even social justice. And so I think things are starting to balance back out. But to Mark's point, it's going to require all of us to hold our elected representatives accountable to represent what it is that we want to see. And I'm afraid we're out of time. The panelists will be around for a few additional questions. I would like to invite everyone to provide, 30-second closing remark. Start with Bobby.
So first of all, thanks everyone for attending this today and letting us speak with you about these projects and the opportunity in the state. I do want to add, I did focus a lot on solar today, and that's just because I've been in the weeds on Badger Hollow recently, and I think it's kind of a newer opportunity for Wisconsin. But I do want to emphasize, wind absolutely has a very strong place in the renewable energy future for Wisconsin. We took our lumps in 2008 for Forward, and we haven't done a lot of wind activity in Wisconsin. But as of late, we do have a brand new 200 megawatt wind farm under development currently. And so we are focused on getting back into that in the state right now. So I just don't want anyone to leave and think that I gave the impression that wind has no place here, because that's not the case.
Thanks, Bobby. Mariah?
To echo that, thank you all for allowing me to be a part of your day. I appreciate that. We had really good questions. I will be around if you've got other questions. I'd be more than happy to answer those for you. There is a booth for Good Steward out there, so stop by and say hello.
And I'll just finish by saying I travel a lot for my job, and I go to a lot of different conferences. And I am just so deeply impressed by the quality of people that are here and the number of people that are here. It tells me an awful lot about the future that is going to be real in Wisconsin in a very short period of time. So thank you all for everything that you do for the industry and for us as humans wanting to live on this planet in the next.
And I would certainly echo that sentiment. So thank you very much for your time. Hope you found this informative and interesting. Please join me in thanking the panel.